It's showtime.
With Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We are off and running for this, the 11th day of October, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That, of course, is where you go if you would like to, well, jump into the Madcap Mary Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Just click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, both of which are free. Everything's free at The Horn. We don't charge for anything here. And you will be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Hoghead, Jug of Punch, and VT Blom. And, of course, you will be moderated by midweek utility pinch hit chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve, from Georgistan. Yay. Thank you. Thank you, Steve, for being there. Sparky, our Spacing Guild Master, gets Wednesdays off. Being as how Sparky was raised without being subjected to a whole bunch of religious insanity, it's just icky. So enjoy the evening, Sparky. Here we go. It is, yeah. The 11th of October is a prayer meeting Wednesday, and we're going to have some of that here, without a doubt, because it matters, because, you know, a whole bunch of the people who are screwing up our country right now, they're evangelical fundamentalist homosexuals, and that's just all there is to it. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, as per, you know, the usual, we get the program started of an evening with thanks to our subscribers. And those thanks, well, go out this evening to Mary Bell in Kansas and to Mike in Cascadia. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mary Bell. Thank you to John in Maryland. Thank you, John, very kindly. Thank you to Brendan in Oregon. Thank you, Brendan, so very much. And thanks to Tony in Chico, quite possibly one of our longest-term subscribers. Thank you, Tony. Thank you very, very much. As well as thank you to Christopher in Oregon as well. All of that taken together means that, well, yes, it's not as bad as it ended up last night. We actually, the fundraising goal for this evening is on the order of carry the 19. Around $300. So that's where it stands. 10 at 30, 30 at 10, 1 at 300, 2 at 150, 4 at 75. 8 at 37.50, 16 at, 18 and a quarter, Right, exactly. And then we can, and then there's the roundup for the oil change on the Gulf Stream 5. Right. Yeah. Also, this program, this very evening, is brought to you in part, no, not in any part at all. This is entirely bogus. But now I've wrapped myself into a nightly thing I have to do. So, tonight is brought to you not at all in part by Horn Labs. Horn Labs working every day to create more bogus nutritional aids that will do absolutely nothing for you. Horn Labs, proud purveyors of great God Almighty guava and anodyne arugula and avuncular avocado, badass banana, and many, many other products. Mm-hmm. Horn Labs accept no substitutes. This evening, of course, we're encouraging you to run out there and try. If you liked radical rutabaga, well, you're going to love, and if you enjoyed perspicacious parsnips, you will be absolutely over the top thrilled with God, why do I do this to myself? Pusillanimous pawpaw. That's right, Pusillanimous pawpaw from the hills and hollers of Appalachia. Pusillanimous pawpaw in capsule form will provide you with all the daily pawpaw goodness you could possibly want or ever desire. Pusillanimous pawpaw from Horn Labs contains a full day's load of pawpaw nutritional magnificence. Pusillanimous pawpaw from Horn Labs. Accept no substitutes. Only $29.95 for a 1 month supply, $60 for 2 months, and $91.25 for a 3 month supply of Pusillanimous pawpaw from Horn Labs. You'll also get a little bundle of test strips so that you can make sure that your order of Pusillanimous pawpaw from Horn Labs is absolutely worthless. No, not a pawpaw, Steve. Pawpaw. P-A-W. P-A-W. It's like a cross between custard and banana. P-A-W. P-A-W. Pusillanimous pawpaw. Only from Horn Labs. Get yours now. Operators are standing by. This is a free call, and if you order now, shipping and handling will only be $72.15. It's a fruit. A pawpaw is a fruit. Oh, the things I get myself into. And they're really quite yummy. It's just that they look kind of gross, and they don't transport or keep well. So the only way you're ever going to eat pawpaw is if you're somewhere near a pawpaw tree. Or perhaps a pawpaw, well, way down yonder in the pawpaw patch, a pawpaw patch. Yeah, so Pusillanimous pawpaw from Horn Labs. And as we move through fundraising for the month, and I get so sick of this. I've got topics that I just want to jump right into, but we got to do this. Just remember, every month that we meet our fundraising goal, at the end of the month, we get a little bonus, courtesy of nudging the Norsky, licking the Lithuanian, and cashing the check. We're working our way through the European map. So we need to keep up with everything so that when we get to the end of October, we'll cash the check and nudge the Norsky and lick the Lithuanian. Yes, James, we're working on that busily in the Horn Labs. Have you tried Proudly Punctual Prickly Pear Pills? Our lab technicians are working round the clock. You can understand how it might be a little difficult, being as how the pears are, you know, prickly. Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, Jesus. Moment of language, courtesy of Bill. Subject line, I believe in. I hate the saying, I believe in. Why can't people just say, I believe, or I don't believe? just leave the word in out of it, because it either exists or doesn't exist. Of course, this is kissing cousin, ew, to my concept of the word believe being the most dangerous word in the English language. And you can either say I think or I know. And you know what? Most of the time, I believe and I think and I know are actually superfluous, because they're the front end of statements of fact. Or, well, in the case of mythology, myth. You know, I believe the flying spaghetti monster is real. And the end part comes from, because it's prayer meeting Wednesday and we can talk about these things. The in part, the word in, that preposition there, I think it denotes a sort of agency on the part of that thing which is being believed. Or upon. Yeah. Exactly. Anatole's with the program in the chat room. I believe out. Mm-hmm. So we've got that to ponder as we go into the bulk of the program. So around $300 to raise this evening, and you can do that at PayPal. Of course, we're still looking for subscribers. There's that little box at the PayPal interface. If you don't like PayPal, you can always go to patreon.com/Bob Kincaid and work it there. And I'm still getting bumper stickers out. A little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time. If you haven't got yours, you will. So hopefully that's all out of the way now. And I can leave it alone and we'll just make the fundraising goal for the evening and everything will be happy. Okay? Because there's stuff. It is prayer meeting Wednesday. And I'm just going to jump right to the stories, because, because it's prayer meeting Wednesday, for Christ's sakes, right? And for Muhammad's sake, and for Buddha's sake, and for various and sundry Shinto gods' sakes, and for Marduk's sake, and Zoroaster's sake, and, well, not really Zoroaster, but Ahura Mazda's, and for the sake of Huitzilopochtli, and, well, just Quetzalcoatl, and for all of their sakes. Get the hockey puck and the duct tape, because this is some pretty disgusting shit. Mm-hmm. It is. Because enough time has passed since the Las Vegas massacre that happened primarily because any American can buy the weapons necessary to perpetrate a Las Vegas massacre. That's the reason he did it, because he could. And we've got other topics to go into this evening, but I want to just get this out of the way so that we can all understand what it means when we say the peace that passeth all understanding, and what is really contained in the idea of the love of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Because what I have here are various and sundry examples of Christians trying to explain why around 600 people were shot in Las Vegas. We'll start with the Pope of Evangelical Fundamentalist Amosexuality, former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson of, well, Pat Robertson Industries. Don't say I didn't warn you to get the hockey puck and the duct tape out. Okay? This is some gross shit we're going into here, okay?
Violence in the streets, ladies and gentlemen. Why is it happening? You know, what I'd like to give you is the fact that we have disrespect for authority. There is profound disrespect of our president all across this nation. They say terrible things about him. It's in the news. It's in other places. There's disrespect now for our national anthem. disrespect for our veterans, disrespect for the institutions of our government, disrespect for the court system.
Timeout, that business about disrespect for our national anthem. This is one of those asshats who thinks that we should all be forced to look at the Ten Commandments every time we turn around. Unfortunately, one of those commandments is that thou shalt have no other gods before me, and there's something in there about not making graven images. The flag's a graven image. I mean, there's even a religious sect that refuses to pledge allegiance or hold their hands over their heart for the national anthem, and they get to do so legally. The Supreme Court said so. That would be your Jehovah's Witnesses, because they consider it deification of a graven image, which, if you get right down to it, it is. But, you know, former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson, well, he wants us to all worship the flag. Yeah.
All the way up and down the line, disrespect. And when you lose that kind of respect, you lose this authority. But more than anything, until there is biblical authority, there has to be some controlling authority in our society. And there is none. And when there is no vision of God, the people say, there's no vision of God, the people run amok. When there's no vision of God, the people run amok. And that we have taken from the American people the vision of God, the whole idea of reward and punishment, an ultimate judge of all our actions, we've taken that away. And when there is no vision of God, the people run amok.
Because, you know, that's what Las Vegas was. It was just somebody running amok. Running amok with a whole lot of semi-automatic weapons that had been modified to mimic full automatic weapons fire. That's all. What Pat is saying there, not that you need my interpretation, is that if only we were a theocracy like Iran, we wouldn't have massacres like this. And you know, he may be right. If we were only a theocracy, then the government itself would be doing the oppressing, declaring what can be said, what can be thought, what can be expressed. But we do have this little thing called the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, which makes sure that the government will not suppress freedom of speech or of the press. But that did not stop Geezer Disgustus from channeling his inner dictator. Speaking in the Oval Office today, Kaiser Kumquat went off on the press. "It's frankly disgusting the press is able to write whatever it wants to write." Reporter Abby Phillip heard him say it. "It is frankly disgusting the press is able to write whatever it wants to write." You know, there's always been a dynamic tension with the First Amendment and between government and the press. This in particular is not surprising insofar as he's been screaming fake news since someone else coined the term. And even before that, his followers were chanting a Nazi slogan at his various and sundry rallies, to wit, Lügenpresse. In a tweet, he decided that NBC needed to have their broadcast license revoked. "With all the fake news coming out of NBC and the networks, at what point is it appropriate to challenge their license? Bad for country." This is a guy who shows people a bogus certificate when they get around him, showing, "Look at this, I've got a certificate here. It says I've got an IQ of 203. Mm-hmm. He does that. And he'll show them his testimonial. And the heart he's got for courage, and Right. And then it doesn't tell anybody that he, you know, stole them from the archive of the props department for Wizard of Oz. No. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. You heard him. Hey, Bob, that there is slow-rolling theocracy again. Some sort of controlling authority until we have biblical authority. Yeah, it is, Ron. Yeah, it is. What was he mad about? Well, he was mad about the fact that NBC broke the story this morning about where the remark about Trump being a fucking moron, that's a quote, y'all, was made. Of course, Secretary of State Rexxon Tillerson is the one who is alleged to have referred to Trump as a fucking moron, and he was said to have said it last summer. And NBC put some meat on the bones today by giving us the context in which it was said. They're having discovered that it was after a meeting at the Pentagon, which Rexxon Tillerson attended. And let's stop pretending that Rexxon Tillerson is some paragon of moral virtue. This is, after all, the former CEO of ExxonMobil, who, among other things, accepted some high civilian honor from Big Bad Vladdy Daddy, naming him a friend of Mother Russia. See, you have metal to prove. Exactly. Ron, that is the Bobsky Kinkadovich of the Russian branch of the Kincaids. But still, you don't... This is not a defense. But apparently Rexxon Tillerson literally rose through the ranks at Exxon. He is starting out, so to speak, in the mailroom and clawing and scraping his way up until he was the CEO. So there's got to be some sort of... probably mental capacity of some quality there, even if it's tainted with, remorseless avarice and a disregard for, say, the indigenous peoples who happen to be sitting on top of his oil. You know, it's just capitalism. Right. But it was at a meeting at the Pentagon. And Trump was there, and we still don't know what the meeting at the Pentagon, what the purpose was, except that maybe it was, could be said generally to have been the education of Donald Trump. But at this meeting at the Pentagon, Trump was shown a chart showing how many nuclear weapons we have. And said, I want to have 10 times as many nuclear weapons. We need 10 times as many nuclear weapons. Or something to that effect. At which point, people had to try to explain to Donald Trump why we can't have 10 times as many nuclear weapons. And you just feel sorry for whoever had to make that attempt. Because they knew that they were just... barking down a well. And that down that well, there was no Timmy to hear Lassie bark. And so after the meeting, speaking to someone else, Rexxon Tillerson referred to Donald J. Trump, the President of the United States, as a fucking moron. Primarily because Donald J. Trump, the President of the United States, is a fucking moron. Okay? And so so this incensed the fucking moron. To the point that now he's talking about whether NBC should have a broadcast license. And interestingly enough, as Marty points out,
networks don't have broadcast licenses. That's true. Only the actual stations that broadcast over the public airwaves have to have licenses. There's no license for this program because it goes out over the internet. There's no licensing required of cable. And even the FCC has only marginal authority for what happens on cable. The reason I can sit here at 6:25 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, you know, prime time, you know, when the children might be listening and stuff, and talk about the fact that the Secretary of State referred to the President of the United States as a fucking moron is because the FCC has no jurisdiction over this program whatsoever and thus no power to censor it. Okay? But that just pissed Donald Trump right off. He thinks that, what was the quote again? It is frankly disgusting the press is able to write whatever it wants to write. That's right. He just said that the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States is frankly disgusting. I wonder how all the evangelicals that keep supporting him are going to feel about that, because, of course, the religious freedom is also enshrined in the First Amendment. Granted, it's that poor part of the First Amendment that is most potent and most alive right now, insofar as, well, as we've discussed in the past, the First Amendment is little more than a life support system for the religion industry. But you got to wonder how they're going to feel about it. Well, you know, maybe when we have that convention of the states that even some progressive types think would be a lovely idea, maybe we can work this all out there in the convention of the states. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I got one question out of all of this. Okay? And here's that question. Why were they having a meeting at the Pentagon to explain to Donald Trump how many nuclear missiles we have? See, this is why I don't sleep well. This is why I wander around muttering at myself, because I never get all the information that I actually want. And I leave wondering why. My whole world is why. You know, when you've got children, toddlers go through that phase where everything, why is the sky blue? Well, because we live on Earth. Why do we live on Earth? Ferg and I were talking yesterday or day before about the fact that children entering their freshman year in high school this year were born after 9/11. And that there will come a point where somehow or another, 9/11 will come into the conversation, and some little kid will say, why was there a 9/11? And so we played this little game where I'd answer, he'd answer, and I'd say, but why? And he'd answer, and I'd say, but why, but why, but why? Why was that meeting taking place? I mean, is that just one of those things that happens in summer in D.C.? You have the president over to the Pentagon in the company of the Secretary of State for beer and Skittles and talking about how many nuclear weapons we have? Which leads to a larger question. You know, there's that old gag promulgated, I think, maybe by somebody else, but I think of it in terms of Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, the prophet Bill Hicks, where he said, you know, there's a right after the president is sworn in, they take him into a darkened room and show him footage of the Kennedy assassination. And the president looks up all of a sudden and goes, hey, wait, this isn't the Zapruder film. And the people in the room say, exactly, Mr. President. And then the president says, where do I sign? Well, I think the lie has been put to that, sadly. You missed that one, Bill. Peace be upon you. because they obviously didn't show it to Trump. Or if they did, he asked why were there no naked women in it. Because for some reason or another, and you know, some ex-presidents would be handy in a moment like this. Years ago, there was an animated series that ran on Saturday Night Live called The Ex-Presidents, I think it was, in which former presidents of the United States would show up as superheroes and right wrongs. Well, we've reached the point where we need the ex-presidents. If you think about it, the living ex-presidents are Obama, W, Clinton, H.W., and Jimmy Carter. It is highly likely that every Trumpansy in the United States at some point in time voted for one of those people. If they didn't vote for Clinton, they voted for H.W. Now, of course, we'll leave the Lyndon LaRouche types out of this for purposes of argument, but you get my point. It is time for every one of the ex-presidents to band together and speak up and speak out. Plain and simple. It would be nice if we could... I really would. Or maybe it's classified. Maybe it's something that we don't dare let the American people know. But how is a new president... Because we're told, time after time, Republicans and Democrats alike will tell you the same thing. No matter how ready you think you are for the presidency of the United States, when you get there, the first thing you figure out is that you're not in any way ready to be president of the United States. Every single person who has been president of the United States has been engaged in a whole bunch of on-the-job training. Some were more suited to being president than others, but they all had to learn because there's stuff you just can't know unless you're president. Advisors to the president can't know what it is. Near and dear, first ladies, nobody except the person upon whom that awesome duty and responsibility descends can know what it is. But there are protocols for letting the president know what those responsibilities are. And I would kind of like to know how that's conveyed. Because it might give us an idea of why that meeting was taking place. Because it is, it's pretty terrifying to know that this guy was so disconnected from reality that when he was told the number of nuclear weapons we have, you know, which is in the thousands, enough to roast every square inch of this planet and render it radioactively incapable of supporting life for goddamn generations, and the guy says, we need about 10 times as many. That's what I want, 10 times as many nuclear weapons. I want to be able to roast the entire planet 100 times, 1,000 times over instead of just 100, or 10,000 times instead of 1,000. We don't have enough nuclear weapons. God almighty. But the fact that this information was leaked, the fact that this information was that somebody felt like it was necessary for the public to know exactly how far off the rails this president is already. Well, I guess I'm grateful for it. But I'm also damned well terrified. And out of it, the idea that comes from this reporting, the idea that occurs in the mind of the President of the United States is that the Fourth Estate needs to be suppressed because we don't need that kind of information. The only information that we need is the information that he deigns to fucking tweet. You want to know how weird it is? Here's how weird it is. There are plenty of people talking, and you know, again, I revert to my previous brief to the extent that until somebody does something vis-a-vis the 25th Amendment or impeachment, this is all just whistling past a graveyard. It's a mailer moment. It don't come to nothing, Mr. Finch. But I've got a quote here for you. Trump is continually tweeting, "I know what he's doing, and I understand why he's doing it. And his motives are pure. Don't misunderstand. But I don't think it is useful or helpful for any employee anywhere to be forced to do something because the government says they must. We don't want the president being able to demand anybody that he's unhappy with behave in a way that he requires." Who disagrees with that statement? Okay, I disagree with the business about motives being pure. But Trump is continually tweeting, "I don't think it is useful or helpful for any employee anywhere to be forced to do something because the government says they must. We don't want the president being able to demand anybody that he's unhappy with behave in a way he requires." What's to fight with there? Any disagreement? I hope you left the hockey puck in, because you're going to do some when I tell you who said that. Are you ready? Maybe if I do it with a funny voice, you'll have a better idea. Trump is continually tweeting, "I know what he's doing, and I understand why he's doing it, and his motives are pure. Don't misunderstand. But I don't think that it is useful or helpful for any employee anywhere to be forced to do something because the government says they must. We don't want the president being able to demand anybody that he's unhappy with behave in a way that he requires." Clearer? Yeah. That's Rush Limbaugh. One gets the sense, and perhaps wrongly, but a whole bunch of this country seems to be sharing it, that we're getting the speed wobbles on a downhill run, and we're nowhere near the bottom of the hill. Brother Deacon Asa says that meeting at the Pentagon probably took place because Cuddly Bear Vladdy Daddy needed to know exactly how many nuclear warheads the United States is in possession of, therefore Comrade Kumquat had to find out. That's possible. Of course, my inclination was to think that maybe this was the moment when they explained how to... everything's gone pear-shaped and sideways and south, and we've just got to start a nuke. You've got to fire some nukes. Well, here's how we do that, Mr. President. Because along the way, another leak that came out is that there's been a conversation between Jim Mattis and John Kelly about whether or not they would physically tackle Donald Trump if he tried to go for the nuclear football.
And I'm going to ask you for a moment to put partisan politics aside and just ask yourself, or think to yourself, can you think of anyone, any president, about whom any member of the cabinet or inner circle would ever have had reason to do that with? Not even dim leader. Okay, maybe Reagan. But not Carter. Not Ford. Jesus Christ, if zombie Richard Nixon came back, he'd look at Trump and say, oh, I resigned? Jesus Christ. Henry, what have the Jews done? This is getting a little creepier. What's the remedy? How do we get out of this puzzle box? Well, once again, there are only two options: 25th Amendment and impeachment. How bad is it? I actually saw a tweet today from none other than Mika Brzezinski of, you know, that tawdry little program that I watch in the morning for want of it. Well, Bob, you could be watching Free Speech TV. No, I couldn't. It is not on my system. Again, I reiterate, my choices are that program, the deadly dull, almost unwatchable program on CNN, or three psychos on a couch over on Fox. That's it. What about RT? Shut up. Mika Brzezinski actually tweeted the hashtag 25th Amendment now. Now, granted, that hashtag has been around for quite a while. I've used it quite a bit. But it was kind of surprising to see her use it because, frankly, she would not be allowed to use it without the brass at NBC giving her permission to use it, because this is one of those places where the First Amendment does not apply. Government can't suppress your right to free speech, but the corporation certainly can. Now, are they going to take her off the air for tweeting that hashtag, 25th Amendment now? Is she going to get the Jemele Hill treatment? No, I don't think so, because Mika is white, and has privilege, and didn't make a direct assault or a perceived direct assault on the money like Jemele Hill did while black. Now, granted, her boyfriend Joe has not used that hashtag yet, but, well, she may lead him along. Because now they are pushing hard to try to show themselves as prophets of the incompetence of Donald Trump, when the greater reality is that they were enablers of the candidacy of Donald Trump. But they're trying to get out from underneath that cloud. Right. Heather says Trump is president in his own delusional mind, not ours. The man knows nothing about how the country's run. This is my main issue. It's hard for me to determine just exactly what my main issue is with him. More and more, I'm convinced he really is suffering from neurosyphilis. Meanwhile, though, the granddaughter of Nikita Khrushchev has made a declaration. Interviewed by the Washington Examiner, Nina Khrushcheva, granddaughter of Nikita Khrushchev, said, here, President Trump defined fake news the way Joseph Stalin defined enemies of the people. If they offer a slightest objection to his rule, they must be wrong, and they must be silenced. Continuing, Nina Khrushcheva said, somewhere on the way to his real estate reality TV career, he forgot his lessons in civics and American democracy from high school. Or maybe he always had an F in those subjects. Being rich, he didn't and still doesn't think they apply to him. For that, we are all paying dearly. By the way, Nina Khrushcheva is an international affairs professor at the New School in New York City. So she's not just speaking, you know, as Nikita Khrushchev's granddaughter. And the longer he stays in, she said, offering more and more somewhat Stalinesque amendments to American democracy, the more autocratic erosion to this once wonderful system we will experience. Wow. Earlier today, in the House of Representatives, in an act of bravery, the following happened. This is the statement that was issued with it. On Wednesday, October 11th, 2017, Congressman Al Green, Democrat of Texas, released a statement on impeachment. I love my country. I salute my flag. I say the Pledge of Allegiance, and I believe in liberty and justice for all as declared in the pledge. I also believe that to acquire liberty and justice for all, some must stand alone. Like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., I believe that the truest measure of a person is not where you stand in times of comfort and convenience when the world is with you, but rather where do you stand in times of challenge and controversy when you may stand alone. Today, I rise to use the constitutionally prescribed political process of impeachment to speak truth to the most powerful man on earth, the President of the United States of America. I do so knowing that the public has been led to believe that a president must commit a crime to be impeached, which is not true. If any president persisted with the lie that Hitler was right, he would be and should be impeached not for a crime, but for betraying his trust as president. I do so knowing that many of my contemporaries will criticize my actions. Some will castigate me. Others may desire to do something more dastardly with hopes of suppressing all embers of courage that might inflame others to speak truth to power or the powerful. Ultimately, to again quote Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., I will do that which is neither safe nor politic nor popular. I will do that which is right, and let others do what they may, and allow history to judge us all. And so it was that Representative Green introduced his privileged resolution on impeachment, and then immediately pulled it. Because had he not pulled it, the Republican majority in the House of Representatives, Quislings all, would have killed it. They weren't going to debate it. They were mandated to debate it. But the only debate that was going to be had would be on the first Republican recognized who would move to table the resolution. There would be a second, there would be a debate on whether or not to table, and then it would be tabled and it would be over. So, knowing the parliamentary rules, Representative Green withdrew his measure. He'll be back. And it is a, speaking figuratively, it is a shot that has been fired across the bow. By the way, there was a story, I believe, out of Vanity Fair that I read earlier today that pointed out that back when he was still in the White House, racist Bannon tried to explain to Dolt 45 that the greatest threat to his presidency was not impeachment. He said, "Mr. President, the greatest threat to your presidency is the 25th Amendment." You know what Tangerine Tiberius said in response? 25th Amendment, what's that? At which point, you almost, kind of, but not really, feel a passing mote of sympathy for Steve Bannon? Yeah. Because that meant that Steve Bannon then had to explain what the 25th Amendment was to Donald Trump. And the fact that his own cabinet could turn on him. Which, of course, probably ramped up the paranoia to no small degree. Yeah. Because the whole story was all about how Trump hates everybody. That's a quote. In his White House staff. The article is at vanityfair.com. It is by Gabriel Sherman from today. Several people close to the president have recently told me in private, he, Gabriel Sherman, that Trump is unstable. These are quotes, unstable, losing a step, and unraveling. He continues, "In recent days, I spoke with a half dozen prominent Republicans and Trump advisors, and they all describe a White House in crisis as advisors struggle to contain a president who seems to be increasingly unfocused and consumed by dark moods. Trump's ire is being fueled by his stalled legislative agenda." He doesn't even know what a legislative agenda is. Come on. "And to a surprising degree by his decision last month to back the losing candidate, Luther Strange, in the Alabama Republican primary. Alabama was a huge blow to his psyche," a person close to Trump said. "He saw the cult of personality was broken." Whoa. Trump vented to his longtime security chief, Keith Schiller, "I hate everyone in the White House. There are a few exceptions, but I hate them." This, of course, was denied by a White House staffer. You know, kind of the way that people would deny allegations when women would say that they had been groped, fondled, raped, whatever, by Harvey Weinstein. Yeah. The article continues to note that John Kelly's miserable in his job, is remaining out of a sense of duty. Yeah. It continues on noting that former chief strategist Steve Bannon told Trump that the risk to his presidency wasn't impeachment, but the 25th Amendment, the yada, yada, yada. When Bannon mentioned the 25th Amendment, Trump said, "What's that?" According to a source, Bannon has told people he thinks Trump has only a 30% chance of making it to the full term.
So where do we go? James with a note. More fundamental than the First Amendment, Trump has a primal urge to show everyone who's the fucking boss. Bannon left saying that his hands were on his weapons. Well, Donnie has weapons, and I think he's just itching to show them off. He needs a lesson in medieval history, i.e. the goddamn Magna Carta. He thinks he's king of the world, and he needs a straitjacket. He needs to be peacefully removed from office. That's what he needs. Because the entire world is imperiled at this point in time by his presence as President of the United States of America. It is that serious. Nobody wants 10 times as many nuclear weapons as we already have who doesn't want to use them. That lesson is there for anyone with eyes to see and ears to hear, and it comes to us from Las Vegas. Nobody wants that many weapons who has not also contemplated using them. And that's where we are. And that is a terrifying place to be. So you heard Pat Robertson blaming Las Vegas on people not being sufficiently obsequious to Jim Baker, the flag, God, what have you. Well, there are other Christian explanations for Las Vegas. How about helmet-haired, proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher, over at the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippistan? Yes, yes, absolutely, Arthur. Arthur says, I told you he was being drugged by the lizard people of Norblap. He seems increasingly confused. And there's Alex Jones out there on this topic, too, of course. Yeah, well done. Well done, Arthur. Now, Brian Fisher knows why Las Vegas happened, because there wasn't anybody returning machine gun fire a quarter mile away and 32 stories up at the Mandalay Bay. That's it, sure.
Let us go to Terry in Wichita, Kansas. Terry, welcome to Focal Point. What's on your mind? Talk to me. Got about 30 seconds. Hit me with your best shot.
Well, my best shot is this. If you take the guns out of the hands of common citizens, this is going to happen more and more. What if somebody that was next door to him who had a legalized handgun could have gone in there and stopped him before the police could ever have made it up to that room?
Well, you know, and again, I would say the same thing I've said. I don't know what options would have existed. I think it's a good question to raise, Terry. Might have been difficult. The door is locked. I think the cops had to bust it down. I don't know how many people are going to do that, even if they hear the shooting from inside the window. But that certainly would create the possibility, if there was somebody next door with a weapon, maybe this thing could have been stopped before 55 people were dead. Again, the problem is not too many guns, but too few.
Yeah, thanks to our buddies at Right Wing Watch for taking one for the whole world and going out and getting this bilious garbage. So if only there'd been more people shooting, we would have, maybe Las Vegas wouldn't have, I can't even fathom what passes for the neuroelectric pulses that most people would call thought that results in that. And then there's Coach Dave Daubenmeyer. You remember Dave Daubenmeyer. He's the guy who's so proud that he and his wife were successful in raising non-lesbian softball-playing daughters. Right. Because they've got nice long hair and not overly large backsides. That Dave Daubenmeyer. Yes. Well, he too has had a word from on high, from the almighty creator of the universe, about why Las Vegas happened. God done it.
So I was thinking, if today in America's world, the world of America, where guys climb up in towers in Las Vegas and pick off people to concert.
Pick off?
With people indiscriminately.
No, dumbass. No. He didn't pick off people in a concert. He mowed them down. He shot into the crowd indiscriminately. To pick off suggests sniper fire with individualized targets. This was not the case. This was a man with constitutional, ordinary access to firearms who, having purchased them legally, decided to use them. That's all.
Kill one another. The wrath of God being revealed. See, the wrath of God being revealed, I mean, the things that the Lord used to prevent, he doesn't prevent. He didn't prevent them.
And he stopped preventing them long about the time that he allowed the heathen Chinese to invent gunpowder. I guess that's the lesson. I don't know.
Maybe it doesn't cause a hurricane to come into Houston, but he didn't prevent it. That's for sure.
Yeah, he didn't cause it, but he didn't prevent it. So who caused it? Satan? Well, of course. That means that God is not more powerful than Satan. See, this is where these types get themselves into such damn trouble. As Marty points out, Stephen Paddock also didn't climb up in a tower. He checked into a high-rise resort hotel. That, too.
And maybe he didn't cause that guy to shoot people, but he didn't prevent it.
Who's to say he didn't cause it? He said it's the wrath of God being revealed. The wrath of God would be the causing of the... never mind.
He was a restrainer. We used to have a sense of spiritual covering of it that's rapidly disappearing because...
Yeah, we had a sense of it. That doesn't mean it was real there, Coach Dave. Jesus, these people.
Even though I stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, American government's pretty wicked.
Yeah, American government pretty wicked. What about the fetuses? Because I'm sure that's what came next. But, you know, that was October 2nd. By October the 4th, Coach Dave had refined his thinking on what happened in Las Vegas. Remember, he said God didn't cause it, but he didn't prevent it. Well, wait a minute.
I listened to Pastor Manning yesterday. I haven't listened to him in a while. I've got to get him back on the show.
I think we're talking about the Pastor Manning we're talking about is the crazy dude from Harlem that thinks that there's jizz in Starbucks coffee. But, well, you know, whatever.
But he said yesterday, I love truth. I love truth. Pastor Manning.
Yeah, he also loves batshit crazy that doesn't have any truth in it.
And he said, hey, we can deny this all we want to, but God killed those people. God killed them. He let those people happen. God killed them.
You know, there's a photograph. I saw it. I wish I hadn't seen it. It's sort of stuck in my head. It's a young woman. She's laying on her face. She's wearing a pair of Daisy Dukes and a pair of cowboy boots that come about halfway up her calf. And she was murdered right as she, right in the middle of enjoying the country concert that she'd come from somewhere to see. And when these evangelical fundamentalist amosexuals start talking about how God killed her. And she's just laying there on the pavement in a pool of blood with little rivulets of blood running down her legs. I don't have any problem saying that I hate their God. I despise their God. I loathe their God. I'm revolted by that myth to which they cling. Because, you see, their God isn't real. Their God is a fake,
phony baloney manifestation of all the evil and all the hate that lurks and lingers within their own beings. When this sick freak says that God killed the people, the 59 human beings and maybe more, in Las Vegas, when he says that God killed them, that says he approves. That what he's saying, Coach Dave here, and that Reverend Manning sick goddamn freak, what they're saying is that they approve of those deaths, and that had they been given the power of life and death, that they too would have killed. That's the reality. That is Protestant evangelical fundamentalist amosexualism in action. And how anybody could hear a man like this and then say, well, I'm a Christian. I got nothing. Because he believes the same thing you believe. He's going to the heaven that you're going to. You ain't neither one of you going anywhere. But you get my point. I'm not trying to piss anybody off. But he shares your faith. Doesn't matter if he's Protestant or Roman Catholic, Greek Orthodox, Romanian Orthodox, Syrian Orthodox, Serbian Orthodox, Russian Orthodox. It doesn't matter. Baptist, Methodist, Lutheran. It doesn't matter. They all believe the same essential things, and that's all you have to believe. This guy adheres to a religion that says that Stephen Paddock, as long as he asked Jesus to forgive his sins before he died, well, he's up there with a harp and a halo and a fucking crown. You want to be part of that? I don't. You know, St. Pete sitting up there at Pearly Gates with a little checkmate. We're checking here. Let's see. You said... Yeah, you said some really shitty things in life, but here, we gotta just check into the basics. Believe in God? Yep. Believe that Jesus was born of a virgin? Yep. Believe that he grew to manhood and then he went out on he observed the Sabbath and that he went out on a preaching tour and that he was killed but did miracles and healed the sick and made the lame to walk, and made the blind to see. Yep. Believe that he was crucified by the Romans? Yep. Believe that they buried him? Yep. Believe that he rose on the third day from the dead after being in hell for 3 days, which is also eternity. Don't ask. It's math. Yep. Believe that he stuck around for a little bit, and then he flew off into the clouds to be with his daddy God? Yep. Believe that he's coming again? Yep. Believe that he died for your sins? Yep. Come on in! Doesn't matter what kind of shitty things you said or did with your life. Come on in! Earther noting, God kills LGBT people via tragedies and natural disasters. God spares the lives of fundies from hurricanes, but he didn't cause those hurricanes, so don't go there, Bob. Yeah, a little cowbellage for you there, Earther. Back to Dave Daubenmeyer.
And he said, you go back to the Old Testament, and you go through that Old Testament all you want to, and you know what you're going to find out? God ordering people to kill people. He said, God orders people to be killed. And we've reached a point here in America where there are a lot of people going to be killed. There are a lot of people going to be killed. Why? Because it's the judgment of God coming on America. The judgment of God. And if you think that you as a Christian are exempt, you think there are any Christians ever killed there in that thing in Las Vegas? You think you're exempt because you happen to be a Christian? You think you're exempt because you happen to live somewhere out in the country? You really think you're exempt from that? No. And so he says, number one, you better get yourself saved.
You know what's funny? And I feel real icky saying this. What he's describing there, the God he's describing there, is actually the National Rifle Association. It sounds to me like Wayne LaPierre is Dave Daubenmeyer's God. Because it's Wayne LaPierre and his demonic minions who make sure that Las Vegas's happen and Aurora, Colorado's and Luby's Cafeteria in Texas.
and Virginia Tech. And on and on, and Sandy Hook, and on and on. Mad men at Sikh temples in Wisconsin, and on and on. God is Wayne LaPierre. Because it's the NRA that is visiting these tribulations upon the United States of America.
And you better get those around you that you love saved, because God's going to be killing a lot of people. Now, we don't like that theology, do we? Huh? We don't like that theology. But this sure seems pretty good to me.
It seems pretty good to him. Good. Not true, not real, not regrettable, but... No, it's pretty good. It's pretty good when God kills his own followers. Dave Dobenmeyer approves. And even though I didn't play the offertory hymn this evening, it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. Mm-hmm. Wowzer. Note coming in from Robert in Australia. Growing up with nuclear weapons. I have a copy of the BBC documentary, The War Game, made in 1965. It was considered so horrific that the BBC weren't allowed to show it until 1985, 20 years later. I also have a copy of another BBC documentary that looks at the effect of a Hiroshima-sized nuclear weapon being detonated over St. Paul's in London. The documentary explained the effects of the bomb at various distances from St. Paul's. Dead, on fire, dying, melted clothing, cancer, sunburn, etc., etc. It also looked at surviving in a homemade bomb shelter, basically a hole you dug in the back garden that eventually fills with water and covered with the door from your house and then covered with the dirt from the hole you dug for at least 2 weeks with a bucket for a toilet. The program closes with the statement that in a full exchange, the greater London area would most likely be hit with at least 40-plus Hiroshima-sized nuclear weapons, you know, just to be sure you hit it, and that's just London. Another BBC documentary about the British Vulcan strategic bomber, which was designed to deliver to Russia Britain's nuclear response to an attack. The instructions for the crew was to continue on to China if they could, as there would be nothing to come back to. I lived through the Cuban Missile Crisis, Robert says. I lived through the 1983 Soviet nuclear false alarm incident in which Stanislav Petrov decided that incoming U.S. nuclear missiles were a false alarm, and goodness knows how many other 30 seconds from the end of the world incidents that were never publicized. And now I have to get up every morning to check my news feed to see if President Moron has started a full-scale nuclear war yet because he's pissed off about not being patted on the head after making poo-poo. Signed, Robert, from his scotch-filled bunker somewhere in Oz. How much scotch you got? But what Robert, you know, and I do, I feel a greater sense of sympathy for people outside the United States, frankly, than I do for us here. Because we have a mechanism for removing this menace to humanity from office. I do not, I will not, I never will suggest violence upon the person of the President of the United States because it is illegal for me to do so, and I ain't that kind of person anyway. But we have legal mechanisms for removing this monstrosity from office. There's not a goddamn thing Robert in Australia can do. There's not a blessed thing that the billions in China can do. There's not a damn thing that somebody in the UK or Germany or France or Sweden can do. Maybe there's something that one person in Russia can do, but that doesn't look to be happening. Sweet, cuddly, innocent, lovable, huggable Pootie Poot would dearly love it if Dunderhead Donnie would drop the dime on North Korea. Because that would give him an excuse to put paid to us, the U.S. Because now that other countries have nuclear weapons, other countries have decided that we, the only country that has ever used an atomic device on another country ever, will never be allowed to do it with impunity again. So I feel sorry. Jesus, I feel sorry for people in the sorriest for people in the global South. I feel sorry for the few remaining hunter-gatherers in the jungles of the Orinoco Basin or the Amazon, or the few remaining hunter-gatherers on the savannas of the African continent, who are living the same way that human beings have lived as long as we've been human beings. I feel sorriest for them. And on a scale of sympathy, next in line is everybody else who has nothing to do with why the United States is the way the United States is. But my sympathies are at an end for the American people. And I include myself in that, make sure. I include all of us. Anyone who is not doing whatever is possible to try to peacefully and legally see that this monstrosity is removed from office, well, don't expect any sympathy from the rest of the world. There are two mechanisms. We have discussed them ad infinitum. The 25th Amendment and impeachment. Impeachment got a little bit of light on it today, and then the bag was thrown back over it. Because there is a Republican majority in the House of Representatives that would let that man tear our country into a billion tiny pieces rather than honor their oath to the Constitution of the United States. And there is a majority in the Senate that we're told nods its head and shakes their heads and says, oh, well, yeah, I agree with you, Bob Corker. And not a goddamn one of them is willing to even call for the invocation of either of the two methods by which the framers of the Constitution provided us a means for getting a bad president out of office. Not one. Not one. Following up, Robert in Australia says, there is one thing I can do. I can complain to the U.S. ambassador in Canberra. And helpfully provided me a pronouncer so I wouldn't say Canberra in Canberra. Hold on. No, I can't. President Moron hasn't assigned one yet. There is no U.S. ambassador in Australia. Signed, Robert, with lots and lots and lots of scotch. Oh, rub it in, Robert. Rub it in. That's true. Guess where else there isn't a U.S. ambassador? Huh? Yeah, South Korea. Yeah, I know. Wonderful. Yeah. Although I was in a Senate office last week when I glanced up to C-SPAN to find out that the Senate was holding hearings on the confirmation of Calypso Gingrich to be the ambassador to the Holy See of St. Peter. You know, adulteress Calypso Gingrich, married to adulterer Dr. Professor Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist. That Calypso Gingrich. Well, maybe we need the prayers more than we need ambassadors to, say, Australia or New Zealand or... Oh, no, did we send one to New Zealand? There was a crony involved, I think. And I think it made the... It pissed the Kiwis off something rich. But not one in South Korea either. I know. Whew. So, here we are again. And, Yeah, I know. We talk a lot about this. And, Jim, I'm sorry. I don't. I had a note from Jim asking me to talk about 18 U.S.C. 227. Well, I don't know which part of it you want to talk about because there's more than one part. But anyway. We are in a place that this country has never been. Even as Abraham Lincoln had to sneak into Washington, D.C. to keep from being assassinated before he could even be inaugurated, we have never been in a place like this before. And with the proliferation of the articles and the proliferation of the reporting showing how unhinged this man is, the progress from day unto day, from sunrise unto sunrise, becomes a sort of plodding toward Gomorrah. This being prayer meeting Wednesday, remember the bargaining that Lot did with God about saving Sodom? What if I can find 50 righteous men, your godness? Well, for the sake of 50 righteous men, I'll spare Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, if you spare it for 50, Lord, will you spare it for 25? Well, all right, for 25, I'll... Well, there's a sort of math that you can do in the Congress of the United States, too. You need a simple majority to impeach him. A simple majority in the House of Representatives... But because of the sort of stylized Byzantine way that procedure is set up, you need to be able to get the bill of impeachment through the House, through the committee, or like Al Green did, just throw it out there onto the floor and have them not just table the son of a bitch so it can never be brought up again. And then you need a different mathematics in the Senate of the United States. You need 67 senators. I call the patriotism of Jim Mattis into question. I call the patriotism of Rexon Tillerson, even though he's given us great wagon loads of schadenfreude about having referred to the president as a fucking moron, which only a fucking moron wouldn't do because he's a fucking moron. I call the patriotism of all of them into question as long as they stand by mute, as long as they do nothing but gossip and leak to reporters. Sure, the leaking is handy because it lets us know how grave the situation is, but sooner or later, somebody has to do something. You want to know why Donald Trump said I hate everybody in the White House? Because he thinks now that he's in a 25th Amendment cage. He doesn't know when those 8 cabinet members will sign the letter saying that he is no longer fit to perform the duties of his office. But that's also why you've got Jefferson Davis, Beauregard, Sessions the Third, and Betsy DeVos. And Ben Grain Silos Carson in there. Because he hopes that they are loyal. Oh, and by the way, since we're moving toward the halfway point of the program, and I've filibustered my little head off, while we've been talking about all of this, California's burning down. The worst fires in the history of the state. The worst fires in the history of a state that has a pretty extensive history of fires. The death toll is approaching the death toll from Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico. The toll of those missing, holy God,
is 670 human beings.
Thanks to Sandra for providing me this information. 3,500 structures are burnt. 170,000 acres are burnt. 21 people are dead. I reiterate, 670 are missing. Trump has tweeted not a goddamn word. There are also 4 dead Green Berets out of Niger. Anybody want to take odds on if he ever does tweet it, he'll add an extra G to Niger? Anybody? He hasn't said a word. Because, you know, Donald Trump likes soldiers who don't get killed and airmen who don't get shot down. And the Trumpanzees are just walking around with one thumb up their ass and the other up a nostril. And America gonna be great again now. And those 35% are probably tickled pink about the fact that there was an intensive care unit in Puerto Rico where every person in that intensive care unit died for want of electricity. The maggots are probably tickled pink that those goddamn liberals, that you know, 670 goddamn liberals in California are missing, and that, you know, 21 goddamn liberals are dead. Because that is how the maggots are. They're hateful and they're vicious. And all they know is they actually want Donald Trump to tear this place to shreds. And then they want to dance among its shattered remnants. Well, that's a hell of a filibuster, isn't it? 27 minutes past the hour. We started out with $300 to raise this evening. I'm sorry to mention it, but we still have $300 to raise this evening. Hopefully it won't stay that way. If you have something you would like to say, I welcome you to say it. I will not, I don't hate the First Amendment. Donald Trump does, I don't. We call what we do here conversation radio, after all. If you want to reach the program, 304-574-8178. You know, most everybody has some sort of a calling plan now that doesn't include long-distance toll charges. Those things kind of went out with high-button Greaves. That's why we don't have an 800 number anymore. 304-574-8178, or Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And we'll take a break and see what's on folks' minds. You can call in if you wish, or God knows, there's plenty more to talk about. Long-distance dedication going out to Donald J. Trump. From all of us here at the Horn, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Don't come around here no more. down the street.
Cowbell going out to Steve from Georgistan, remarking on the fact that the foregoing track, one of my favorite Tom Petty songs, Don't Come Around Here No More, Steve said it best. It's a bit jumpy, Brother Bob. It goes with the atmosphere. Yeah. It's might jumpy, just a touch. Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of Tom Petty. That, for some reason or another, that one touched me. It's a shame to think about the rock and roll he won't make anymore. By the way, just following up, courtesy of Sparky, the historic wind event that swept across Pacific Gas and Electric Services area late on Sunday and early Monday packed hurricane-strength winds in excess of 75 miles per hour in some cases, according to PG&E spokesman Matt Nauman. Hurricane-force winds in California. Well, now. But, of course, there's no such thing as global warming. The global climate change is just a Chinese hoax meant to destroy our manufacturing base. Hey, by the way, this is just a little out there thingamajig. I hate walking into Walmart, but in the community I live in, sometimes you just have to. There's no getting around it. I can't just drive a 100-mile round trip to down the mountain, to Charleston every time I want something, or a 70-mile round trip to Beckley. And there's not many places, Sears, everything must go. Jesus Christ, Sears. Sears, Sears didn't just die. Sears got killed. If you're curious, just read up on what the CEO of Sears did to wipe out Sears. So we've got a mall in Beckley that's going to be dying soon. So you wind up in Walmart. And lo and behold, I was checking out the other day, and I looked at Fargo and I said, son of a gun, would you look at that? And there it was. It was a Halloween thingamajig. One of those little stationary Mylar balloons. It wasn't helium or anything, just air. But it was it was on a stick. And it was just a little Mylar balloon of like a ghost saying boo or something. But down there underneath the barcode were three amazing words. Words you don't often see in Wally World. Made in USA. Yeah. I saw something made in USA in Wally World. It felt positively apocalyptic. But, there it is. Note coming from James. Napa fires. My friend risked her life to save her beautiful horses. She said she hadn't slept in four nights worrying about them, couldn't get anyone to go up there, and finally took it upon herself. She defied warnings from the sheriff's deputies and hoofed it up about 8 blocks. She brought them out on foot. I know what it's like to get invested in an animal, so I understand it. And provides me with a photograph. Meet Salmon. And Salmon looks like a fine, fine horse with most soulful eyes. But please note that the President of the United States doesn't give a good goddamn. And by the way, if you get a chance, you know, I read Charlie Pierce quite frequently. I have a tremendous amount of respect for both his repertorial skills and his skills as a crafter of prose. And he posted what may very well be the most important thing he's written in quite some time, and God knows it'll just get all over you. It's over at Esquire.com. Click Politics with Charlie Pierce. You want to read this? It's that good. What's the title? I mean, it was the last thing I saw posted today. The words will stand for themselves. It is simply called A Plea for a President. And most of Charlie's posts can be anywhere, you know, they can be short little jabs or long form. And this is more long form. This is one of the longer posts I've seen from him in a while. I'm not going to say anything about it. Don't do it right now. I mean, you know, sit here, hang out with the program. But it's called A Plea for a President. The subhead, it is time for Barack Obama to join the Trump resistance full time. One gets the sense that Mr. Pierce is as rattled as apparently the rest of us are. And that is rattled indeed. Where to go? Well, again, the lines are open if you want to get in on the conversation. That's fine. Of course, we observed Columbus Day officially on Monday. I don't observe Columbus Day. I think if we had any decency about us, we would just end that and, oh, I don't know, as some have suggested, make it Indigenous Peoples Day. That'd be fine by me. Well, I'll go into this in a minute. Let's check in with Steve from Georgia, Stan. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Bob. What's going on, man?
I'm just here, just kind of thinking, babbling. Yeah.
There was quite the latency there. I just barely caught you. There would have been quite the lag time. But I'm here. That's all that counts.
Well, it is. It really is. What's on your mind?
Jumpier than a cat on a hot tin roof. You know?
Okay, so like I said, it's not just me. It's us.
Yeah, these are some scary times. And would you agree this is just as disturbing as the Cuban Missile Crisis? I know it's apples and oranges, but as far as the impact.
Well, what's interesting, Steve, is that you mentioned the Cuban Missile Crisis. I think this, I didn't live through it, so I'm not qualified to speak. But I wonder if maybe the Cuban Missile Crisis wasn't as terrifying. Because maybe there was some sense that the evil Ruskies didn't want to push the button any more than Kennedy did.
Right, and Castro may have had a level head, and we knew that Kennedy had a level head. He wasn't some maniac, you know.
But there's no good faith partner on either side of this the current equation, because Trump is not home, and we are told that Kim Jong bad haircut is not home.
Exactly, and I'm not going to say anything that's going to get either me or you in trouble. But I do fear for our children and our children's children's children.
Hey, well, I fear for the people who are alive on planet Earth right now.
Right.
And what I was going to say is, interestingly enough, lo and behold, Joe Scarborough mentioned the Cuban Missile Crisis today. And, you know, it's interesting because he and I are, let's see, we're about 2 months and 9 days apart in age. He's 2 months and 9 days younger than me. So that means that his mom was carrying him during the Cuban Missile Crisis, just like my mother was carrying me. And when my mom, I guess, was about, oh, let's see, January, December, November. She was maybe about 5.5 months pregnant. So, you know, I was on the way. You know, I was past the tadpole stage. And so, you know, she was kind of invested in my future. Joe was back a little closer to tadpole, but still, I imagine his mom was invested in his future. And it had to be, to be a mother to be, waiting to see if your whole world was going to go up in a nuclear holocaust, had to be absolutely terrifying.
And there's no more horrible way to go. If you're lucky, you'll go quick. If not, then it's just horror. It's horror, dystopian horror, worse than anything you can imagine.
So that led me to think, imagine a woman carrying a child right now. Imagine the woman who found out the day after, and we're talking about a normal woman. We're not talking about one of the maggots. Imagine an ordinary, normal woman who found out, say, the day after the inauguration or the day after the inauguration, whatever, that she was pregnant. And so that would be, you know, maybe she'd just now be giving birth to that baby. And giving birth to that baby in Trump-merica, not knowing what's going to happen tomorrow. What a horrifying thing, Steve. What a horrifying thing.
Presently, where we're at, you know it's going to cause a chain reaction. Like the Cuban Missile Crisis, they were 90 miles off the shore of Miami. You know, if he goes off half-cocked, who knows what the hell is going to happen? And hopefully, I don't know, I've watched a lot of specials on this, but there are commanders or people that control and have keys. Hopefully, they'll buck up and say, I'm not doing this. I'm not twisting this key. I don't know, maybe it's fiction, maybe I've been watching too much TV, but isn't that the way it works? To do a launch, he has to give the signal, and then...
There's a complete process, you know.
Right.
At one point in time, a friend of mine, I don't know if how he'd feel about me mentioning by name or anything, but a friend of mine was in charge of the nuclear arsenal in Great Britain. And we've talked a little bit about what an awesome responsibility that was. And what an existentially terrifying responsibility that could be.
And that's our last hope, is we can hope that somebody will step up and say no.
Well, my God,
Steve.
It's being reported that there's been an actual conversation between Jim Mattis and John Kelly as to whether or not they would be willing to tackle him if he went for the football. I mean, take a minute with that.
Nice, man. And that's why we're jumpier than a cat on a hot tin roof.
I'm more nervous than a whore in church.
Right. And we got Sinclair and Salem merging, and they want to bring the Rapture.
No, you're talking about Tribune Broadcasting. Yeah, that
Tribune, yeah.
Well, you remember the TV show Outsiders that we talked about for a while?
Yes, sir.
Well, the reason that show got canceled, Steve, is because of the sale of Tribune Broadcasting to Sinclair, and you know, Sinclair didn't want to take on the burden of having that show in production.
And they present this as actual news, and the rubes actually believe it's actual news, and it's all propaganda, Bob.
Well,
and they will have these people sold into. We need to do this. We've got to do this.
And by the way, Sparky points out, yeah, the Cuban Missile Crisis was scary for an 11-year-old that I was, and I can only imagine. You know, there I was just safely swimming around in the amniotic fluid, but it had to be. It had to be terrifying. So the question, you know, is it terrifying now? And maybe, well, I don't think my grandkids even know about it. And they're, you know, like 8, 9, and 11. They don't even know about it. So maybe it's better that way. They've got more stuff that they can focus their attentions on, and they're good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Trump-voting teachers. probably aren't talking about it. But
and if it were to happen, Christ. Hopefully it will happen quick. And I can't even believe these sentences are coming
out
of my mouth.
It's not, Steve. It's not going to happen quick. It's not going to happen quick. This is not going to be. This is not some sort of full-scale Soviet-U.S. exchange.
So we're going to be suffering without water, without electric, and this.
Well,
going
no,
for
no,
years
no, no,
years,
no, 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 no. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that if Dolt 45 decides to light the fuse, there will be an emergency meeting of the United Nations. And there will be, if Russia launches at us or if China launches at us, we're going to launch right back. So they're not going to want to do that. And see, this is the kind of thinking that I'm afraid that is being given to Donald Trump that, maybe we could get away with nuking North Korea. And maybe, they're a pain in China's ass and they're a pain in Russia's ass. And maybe they'd understand why we needed to and be real scared of us. And maybe Trump could get a medal for being a friend of Mother Russia, just like Rexon Tillerson did.
Well, that dumb son of a bitch didn't even know what the trifecta was, though.
The triad?
Yes, the land, earth, or sea. He didn't even know. Do you remember Marco Rubio had to explain to him?
Oh, I know. But... No, but,
somebody's got to walk me off the ledge or walk us all off the ledge.
No,
or we're all,
no, baby, you're out here. Light up. Okay, that's what the purpose of the ledge is. You come out here, you light up, you flick butts at the maggots below and hope that their little Chinese polyester hats will catch on fire and but that's what you do. Because there's no ramp off the ledge. Steve, I joke about the ledge. It's all ledge in America right now. I mean, we can pretend that things are okay. And something that I was going to mention to you, something that I wrote on Facebook while I was gone, it was like 2 days after Las Vegas. And I was sitting outside the Hart Senate office building. And I was just sort of paying attention to my surroundings, and I'd been in and out of Senate offices all day for 2 days. And yeah, there was every TV and every Senate office was tuned to something Las Vegas. It seemed. You could tell, you knew the lay of the land based on whether it was on Fox or CNN. I don't think I walked into any offices where it was on MSNBC. But I was sitting outside and I was just we'd gone and we'd had lunch in the basement cafeteria because it's a pain in the ass to go in and out of security to go and so we just had lunch in the Senate cafeteria. And you just if you're like me, you pay attention to your surroundings. And what I saw was Washington just being Washington, okay? Standing outside, I heard a couple of guys, they were splitting up and going their separate ways, and one said, good luck to you with your Astros, talking about the baseball playoffs. And I guess we kind of have to have that, Steve.
To keep on their sanity. I mean, it's a wonder you didn't feel like the little boy holding his finger in the dam.
Right. But Washington is Washington, and really, the only time Washington has really, really gotten upset was when it looked like they were targets back on September 11th. Oh, by God, then they moved. And then, of course, once the all clear was done, they all stepped out on the steps of the Capitol and recited the Pledge of Allegiance or sang the national anthem or something like that.
And more worried at a football player kneeling. I don't think the masses get this or the gravity of the situation. I really don't. But you got smart people like yourself, Mike Malloy, Randy Rhodes, Stephanie Miller's been babbling here lately. She's so upset about it. I mean, the handwriting is on the wall, and I don't mean to frighten people. I'm not an alarmist. I'm an optimist. And I've always tried to hold on to
you
that.
You are. For the most part, you're a little ray of sunshine. Yeah. You really are. I don't say that sarcastically.
Yeah, I know that, but this is getting beyond serious. And I don't have any answers.
Well, consider this. Brother Deacon Asa and his lovely wife have a little baby boy. And he just wrote to me, he said, speaking of offsprings coming into this world at this time, there's video footage of me on election night apologizing to a then two-month-old for having brought him into this world in this time period. It's so sad.
It's heartbreaking.
Because that whole intergenerational, transgenerational thing of, you know, the torch has been passed and you hope for your little ones, and especially when they're little tiny, and you can really, and you can look at them and you can unfold the hopeful future that you have for them. You know, the one where they go off and they go to school and they discover Elodium Fosdex, the shaving cream molecule, or cure cancer or something like that. That's all available to you. It's kind of like what happens when you buy a lottery ticket. You spend the dollar, and, you know, the Powerball is $138 million or whatever. You spend the dollar, and that buys you the right between the moment you buy it and the moment that the drawing takes place to imagine what it would be like to have that $138 million. Well, when a little baby is little, you have the right to expand, to extrapolate out a brilliant, beautiful, wonderful future for that said infant. And then this happens. And all bets are off. It's like you bought the lottery ticket and then you found out that the lottery's rigged, which it probably is.
Or, yeah, it was a misprint.
So, yeah, I wish I could say, okay, everybody, we're just going to calm down and take a deep breath and breathing in again and letting go now. Letting go now, letting everything go, letting your chakras come into proper alignment, letting go, letting go. I can't do that, Steve.
Yeah. And we were so close. We were so close to avoiding this, too. So close. She won the popular
vote. No, we were never close.
You don't think?
No.
Benghazi and, you know.
No, she would not
the
have.
Devil.
She would not have been. Dude, she would not have been allowed to be president.
Yeah, they'd have probably done booted her out.
They
for
wouldn't
some
have had any
now,
problem
yeah.
impeaching her. It's kind of like what Representative Green from Texas said in his statement. Impeachment does not require a crime. High crimes and misdemeanors is a term of art, and term of art means that the words don't necessarily mean what the words would appear to mean. High crimes and misdemeanors is a term of art from 17th and 18th century political theory. And no, he's impeachable, but we suffer from a decided lack of patriotism inside the House of Representatives, because he's been impeachable since his hand came off the Bible. And the Republicans in the House don't give a tinker's damn about the constitutional oath that they swore, or else they would be doing something about it.
Well, I think they want to fulfill Grover Norquist's wet dream, and that's what is holding them up from being true statesmen. They are so close,
which in turn means that they are un-American in the first place, because they're trying, because no, Grover Norquist's wet dream is to destroy constitutional governance in the United States. It's also the wet dream of the NRA. And the Republican majority in the House of Representatives is damned well complicit.
But even him, in his own dark mind, I don't think he wants to blow us all to smithereens.
Who, Trump?
No, Norquist.
I mean, you know, you don't hear much about him. You know, his hang up is starving the beast.
Right. Drowning in the bathtub.
Trump wants the world to look at him and be afraid because he was big enough and bad enough to launch a nuclear weapon. He thinks people will respect him and stop and stop speaking ill of him. When in fact it will just render him the greatest war criminal since, you know, the little guy with the Charlie Chaplin mustache.
And I don't say this to get your show in trouble or anything. It's just my observation. This falls back on me. I think he's a narcissistic madman.
Oh, that doesn't get the show in any trouble. None whatsoever.
Wouldn't you agree with that? Or
he is decidedly mentally compromised. Whether that comes from some organic cerebral process, some organic brain syndrome, some defective disease, whether it comes from dementia, he is not mentally healthy. He is not mentally well. It could very well be that he never has been, okay? That he's been able to hide his disabilities behind his wealth.
Oh, there's all kind of theories. It could be an STD that's been manifesting for the last 20
years. I really believe it's neurosyphilis. Yeah. It's neurosyphilis that he caught after Ivanka was born.
Okay, Bob, well, we got to move forward. What would you recommend in all your infinite wisdom? Do we contact our congressman and tell them, please, get him out of there? We'll accept Pence. We'll accept whoever you want to put in there.
Don't make concessions. Just say, just write to your member of the House and write to your senators. And what you say to your member of the House is, I insist that you support impeachment proceedings before this man gets us all killed. Okay, you don't have to write a legal brief for why. Yeah. Just make it clear that you support it, and get everybody that you know in your district to write something similar. Then, as far as your senators are concerned, you make it clear to them that you support, should he be impeached, that you support them voting to convict. Okay, that's a little ways out. You really don't have to fool with it. The other route is to start demanding, you know, in your social media postings, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, I don't know what all there are. Start everywhere you go, demand that he be removed from office legally and constitutionally, either by the 25th Amendment or by impeachment. Okay?
Either one will work.
That's all we can do.
What are our options? We go down fighting, or we just go down?
It's like Hoghead just said in the chat room. He said, my congressman's a Republican. Fat chance he'll listen to me. Well, you know what? We know for a fact he won't listen to you if you never write.
That's right.
You can at least be on record as saying that you recognize that this country is in a constitutional crisis right here, right now, and that you want the man impeached and removed.
But I feel his frustration, though, Bob.
Well, sure, I do, too. I mean, I got a Republican congressman, too. I got Shelley Moore Capito and Joe Manchin, okay, for senators.
Yep. But it has to start somewhere, and maybe if it starts here, that's a good starting place.
It's something.
It's something. Something to hold on to.
And the, you know, the 25th Amendment is real.
That you got to get Pence to sign off on that, and he is so...
Jesus, really? No, Mike Pencilneck Geek would sign off on that in a minute, because Mike Pencilneck Geek thinks that he has been destined by Almighty God to be President of the United States.
Do you really think he would do that? That gives me hope.
Yes, he'd do it. Oh, my God, he'd do it. Now, the thing is, how much exposure does he have in terms of impeachment proceedings?
We don't know yet.
Now, I'll add another soupçon in. And all of this, please understand, Steve, I'm talking about outside chances. I'm talking about a puncher's chance.
Right.
I'm not talking about a boat race. Yeah. I'm not talking about the fixes here. I'm talking about if there's any chance at all, these are they.
Pie in the sky. I get it. I get what you're saying.
Okay, no, not pie in the sky. Pie in the sky is something that cannot happen. I'm talking about a chance somewhere between being struck by lightning and winning the lottery. Okay? And the one other thing is this. Participate in the process. I've been, you know, it was a couple of Mondays back when I opened the program talking about the Senate race in Alabama. Tomorrow will be 2 months. It'll be exactly 2 months until the Senate election, the special Senate election in Alabama. And I don't know if you're following it or not, but Doug Jones, the Democrat, has a real chance. And he needs help. I will say this proudly to anybody who's listening. We haven't raised a damn dime tonight in support of the program, okay? On a $300 deficit, okay?
Maybe send him a couple dollars if you got it.
Just hear me out. Yeah.
Okay.
So let's I'm going to say this with, you know, 57 minutes left in the program. Whatever you could have or would have donated to help keep the horn on the air tonight, send that to Doug Jones. I don't care where you are. I don't care if you're in a red state or a blue state. I don't care if you're in California or Maine. I don't care if you're in Minnesota or Florida.
Probably really easy to find,
too. Send $3, $2, send a buck, send $5, send $10, send what you can to Doug Jones. Because
I just Google what Doug Jones for Senate and it'll pop right up, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, just Doug Jones, Senate, Alabama, you'll find it.
Yep.
And you know, just do that. Because do you remember, were you listening when I was talking about that article from Vanity Fair, Steve? And it said that Trump was extremely rattled when the maggots in Alabama didn't just do as they were told. And elect Luther Strange.
Luther Strange, yeah.
Well, I mean, truthfully speaking, of the two, he would have been the better. He would have been the better of the two. I mean, he's a wild-eyed nut job, Republican conservative too, but he's not a Roy Tola Moore, all right. And Trump was deeply shaken when America or when Alabama didn't bow and scrape and kowtow in front of him and give Luther Strange the victory. And it's got to just drive him batshit that he got beaten by Steve Bannon, which is probably one of the reasons he hates certain people inside the White House right now, because they made him get rid of Steve Bannon. Okay.
What are the polls reflecting for that race?
Wait. I'm working towards something here.
Okay.
If Doug Jones could actually win that election, well now, that would shake not just Trump, but the entire Republican Party all the way down to the ground.
So it's called a Democrat in Alabama? Oh, my God. They would be shitting their pants.
And there's 4 points between them in polling that has a 4-point margin of error. That's where the race is right now. It's a dead heat, with about 20% undecided.
And when is this finalized?
The election is on December 12th.
So there's still a few months to go for this. A couple of months to go.
It's 2 months from tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, Bob, it's nice talking to you.
And that would be Steve. That would be the best Christmas gift that Democrats, liberals, and progressives could get of any sort. And like you know what? Once the floodgates open, they're awfully hard to stop. And so then in 18, you've got Corker not running. What if a well-known popular Democrat were to run for that seat in Tennessee against a woman who is almost as nutty as Roy Tola Moore? Marsha. Remember Marsha Blackburn up there from, she's up from where, where Charles is from. Goodness.
That crazy district. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? You get,
isn't that the Tri-City area somewhere up in there? I mean,
well, no, that's it. It's just a few miles from the Kentucky state line.
Okay.
But, okay, and so then suddenly things look like they might be possible. Beto O'Rourke is running a campaign against Ted Cruz in Texas, and he's got a shot. That's three. Democrats hold on to everything else they got and get those three. Guess what the Democrats are in the Senate? The majority.
Impeachment City could be happening.
Well, no, because the Senate can't initiate impeachment proceedings.
Right, I know. It starts in the House, but you need two-thirds in the Senate. It's like a court proceeding. The House indicts, the Senate...
The Senate tries,
right. But, you know, the more numbers we get in our favor, the better off we're going to be. Correct?
Right.
Before I have everybody slit in their wrists, Bob, I'm going to get out of here, man.
Well, I don't think anybody's going to do that.
It was nice talking to you. It really was. It's always a pleasure. And I'll be back in touch, okay?
All right. Sounds good. You take care, Steve. You're good people.
All right. You as well, Bob. Take care, man.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Steve from Georgia Stan. So that's where, that's kind of where it stands. Protest? Sure. If there's an opportunity to protest, protest. But the real thrust kind of has to be, at this point in time, getting him out of office. And I'm really not interested in talk about but Mike Pence. We can worry about him later. Of immediate necessity is getting a madman out of the White House. Because you know what? As our buddy Joy reminded me a couple of weeks back, Mike Pence is the lesser of two evils. Right? Yeah. We heard from Steve. The lines are open. If you want to jump into the conversation, that's fine. Note coming in from Michael in Madison. I mentioned Sears. Michael says, my dad spent his career with Sears, most of it as a store manager. He got out and moved on to another company a few years before retirement after he got wind that they were about to fuck over pensions. He's fully retired now, but he still follows and laments the destruction of the company to which he gave decades of his life. He hates Eddie Lambert, the CEO, with a fiery passion he reserves only for monsters like Trump and Cheney. As Dad is always quick to point out, Lambert was a POS hedge fund manager who worships Ayn Rand, no joke. Lambert's plan was never for Sears to remain relevant, much less survive. It's funny you should mention two things in one show that make me think of my dad, because any time Dave Daubenmeyer comes up, I always remember the time Dad drove out to Zanesville, Ohio, to get in that jackass's face. That was during the Obamacare battle, and Daub was staging a protest outside his district's congressperson's office. You know, because fuck health care. Dad got in his face, and never making any threat, just using logical arguments, caused that prick to retreat back inside his van, tail between his legs. I remember he was so happy having sent that freak packing that I told him to call the horn, which he did. Never underestimate the power of good people to do good things. But that's a beautiful moment. And it's got to hurt. Michael's dad has to hurt to see what's happened to Sears. It's kind of like how I remember seeing my father weep when he saw where his furnace used to be, that had been packed up brick by brick, and shipped over to somewhere in China for the making of silicon metal over there. It has to hurt. Because it's like the years that you gave of your life were declared, you know, not that important. And in the case of Sears, my God, Eddie Lambert also controls, you know, because he's a hedge fund prick. He also controls some other retail outlets. So what he's been doing is shutting down Sears stores and then turning around and leasing the Sears properties to stores, to other retail stores, and basically making more money that way. He's making money by killing Sears. Capitalism. Ain't it beautiful? So, you know, that's, well, it's an institution, but institutions die too. Yeah, I remember being a little kid and was you know, kind of heartbroken when, probably nobody's heard of this, but when W.T. Grant went away. And then there was when Montgomery Ward went away. And here in West Virginia, we had stores that were actually West Virginia stores. There was a Walmart-like affair called Hex, and it died. And there was a department store, and it was a wonderful department store called Stone and Thomas. And it got swallowed up by Elder Bierman. And no comparison. There was a massive, beautiful department store in Charleston called The Diamond. There was a men's shop where my grandfather shopped called Frankenburgers. They're all gone. It's right damn difficult to buy a suit in this state anymore. And certainly not the way that you used to buy a suit. You know, a Sunday go-to-meeting suit. Yeah, I'm fortunate. I'm of that generation that saw that go away. Not fortunate to have seen it go away, but fortunate to have, you know, experienced American retail in its golden age. So I get it. Oh, just quick passing mention. Guess who's got $64 million to play with? $64 million more dollars to play with. Big announcement at the Sierra Club's offices in Washington, D.C. today. Michael Bloomberg has given $64 million more dollars to the Sierra Club because he was pissed off, sublimely pissed off, when Scott Pruitt of the EPA announced that he went to Harlan, Kentucky, and announced that the war on coal was over. That was Monday. And what he meant by that was that the EPA would scrap the Obama Clean Power Plan, which was designed to reduce the emissions from coal-fired power plants, you know, that kill people. Right. So Michael Bloomberg said, fuck you, we're going to restart the war on coal. And gave, and the way he thought he would do it would be to give $64 million to the Sierra Club. I don't know if they were popping champagne corks at the Sierra Club or not, but supposedly, according to the news release, some of that $64 million is going to go to support grassroots organizations that are engaged in struggling against coal. I'll let you know if the point of the point of the point of the spear in the struggle against mountaintop removal sees so much as a nickel. I will. I promise. Yes. By the way, we were talking about Roy Tolamore a minute ago. His son's back in the news. Roy Tola has a son that, he's got problems. He does, Roy Tola. He's been busted a number of times, young Caleb Moore. And he's been busted again. He was busted for third-degree criminal trespass, a misdemeanor, related to the time that he got busted about 11 months ago for hunting without a permit. We take hunting without a permit pretty damn serious in Alabama. Uh, Of course, he got busted for hunting without a permit after he got busted for possession of marijuana and Xanax. He blamed that on people who don't like his daddy, the Roy Tola. He took to Facebook back then and said, "This is nothing more than a prime example of how media and crooked police officers and critics of my dad try to not only destroy his career for what he stands for, but will go as far as trying to destroy his family. I am not a drug user, as the drug test taken today will show. As for the malicious possession charges, justice will be served." Young Caleb then agreed to enter a pretrial diversion program with the Pike County District Attorney's Office. And the charges were dropped. This did not change the fact that he got popped for DUI in Alabama and Florida and had three other drug-related charges in three separate Alabama counties. But now he's in hot water for criminal trespass, and the campaign chairman of the Roy Tola Moore campaign, a creep named Bill Armistead, said, "It's a personal matter, and it's a cheap political trick to detract from the real issues facing our country."
You know, Roy Tola, maybe you should have had your boy reading the Ten Commandments a little more often there, bub. You know, without the Xanax.
Yep. Thanks very kindly. I really meant what I said about kicking it over to Doug Jones. Thanks to TK, though, and thank you very kindly to Robert in Australia. Robert says, as the Australian dollar begins its slow and unexplained slide down to 50 cents on the dollar, and as no one else has been able to chip in tonight, I thought I'd send a few dollars before I can no longer afford to do so. Sorry, but once the exchange rate goes below 70 cents, I'll have to reconsider my regular donation. I understand that completely. Thank you, Robert. Why is that happening? The economy, this economy is not that strong. And by the way, a really muscular dollar is not necessarily good for the American economy overseas, but, you know, I'm not an economist. The dismal science. Well, thank you very kindly, Todd. Todd, you forgot to attach the photo. Darn it. Todd says, this is a picture of the yogurt pizza. I want that photograph, Todd, but Todd says the reality that Roy Moore could be a senator could be an argument for secession. You're the best. You're doing a great job. Thank you, Todd. Thank you very kindly. Conversation I was having with Steve earlier about, you know, kids right now. Marty says, I've got a 5-month-old niece, and I fear some effing moron is going to destroy the world before she turns one. That's next May, by the way. I know. Hey, where my grandkids are concerned, you know, they're just getting old enough to where I can start talking to them and teaching them the things that they need to know in life. Like never to vote Republican. And that, you know, Donald Trump is not their friend. And that coal is not good for America. And never to eat at a place called Mom's. And never to sit down and play poker with a guy named Doc. You know, the things you need to know in this world. Right? So, no, I wanted to, just some remarks on Columbus Day, if you don't mind. I got to thinking about all of this, of course. I think about it every time I'm in D.C. Because out in front of Union Station, which we spend a lot of time at because that's where we park, it's the cheapest parking in D.C. You can park all day for $24. But out in front of Union Station, there is this awful sculpture. And the awful sculpture is actually a fountain, but they've turned the fountain off because, you know, you can't have those people getting in and sponging off in the, and, you know, and getting cleaned up in the fountain. I mean, just it's disgusting for the good, God-fearing, upstanding citizens to see homeless people hanging around a fountain. So the fountain's turned off, but the sculpture's still there, and it's Columbus Circle in front of Union Station. Named after that Columbus. And there he stands with his robes on, and there's a globe above his head. And there are statues to either side of him, on either side of the sculpture, one of which is a cowering Native American. The cowering Native American seems to be a theme. You can see it if, for instance, you take the Capitol tour, you'll see all the murals in the rotunda, including the one on the ceiling of the apotheosis of George Washington. That's really what it's called. But there are murals on the walls, one of which is the baptism of Pocahontas. I mean, you don't get much more white guy than me, and even I look at that and go, wow, that's disgusting. And then there's the mural of DeSoto's discovery of the Mississippi. DeSoto was, of course, deader than Pharaoh's cat by the time his band of terrorist stragglers reached the Mississippi River. But there sits DeSoto astride a charger with a cowering Indian looking up at the great white man. Never mind the fact that the goddamn filthy Spaniards were so fucking short that they were practically goddamn hobbits, and the native peoples were, you know, north of 5'8 and up towards 6 foot. They cowered. C-O-W-E-R-E-D. And that one makes me go, oh, that's disgusting too. Also on the walls there is the famous mural of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. But I digress. Columbus. There's really nothing to celebrate in Columbus. He, at least before we got Cortez and Pizarro, was the poster child for the awful European. For some reason or another, he is seen as being a hero of Italian people. Yeah, well, okay. Because he was Italian. But he sailed under the Spanish flag. And he was religiously insane, and he was a nasty son of a bitch. And he was all wrapped up in his Christianity. But we have this notion, and let me see if I can put this in some sort of perspective. It's just like, and then one day the Spanish decided that they want, no. Several things happened that make the age of exploration happen. One of them is what happens in May of 1453 when the forces of Mehmet II overrun and finally breach the walls of Constantinople. Constantinople had, of course, been the repository of all knowledge, at least since the burning of the library at Alexandria, the last acts of which were finally accomplished by the Christians. And while Western Europe had descended into the ignorance and superstition and feudalism of what were called the Dark Ages and the Middle Ages, Roman culture had been kept quite alive in what was still referred to by them as the Roman Empire, in Byzantium, in Constantinople. And so when Constantinople fell, the learning and the knowledge that was there was disseminated into Western Europe. There's a bright line that runs from the fall of Constantinople to the beginnings of the Renaissance. But before you can have the Renaissance, you have to have the Black Death, the plague. You have to have the great schism of the Roman Catholic Church, in which there were popes both at Rome and Avignon. The French favored the Pope at Avignon. The British and the Germans favored the Pope in Rome. And neither of them were worth the powder and lead it would have taken to blow them up. There wasn't a lot of powder and lead back then anyway, by the way. The church descended into spasms of heresies. We tend to think of the Roman Catholic Church as pretty much monolithic. In the 14th and 15th centuries, it was hanging on by a thread and coming apart at the seams. You've got the Muslims in Eastern Europe all the way to the gates of Vienna, and you've got Muslims on the Iberian Peninsula, controlling much of what we know of as Spain. And petty Spanish and Portuguese kingdoms vying with each other for control of what was left. Well, by about 1440, upheavals in the French royal house. You know, the French had been getting stomped for 100 years. Crécy, Poitiers, Agincourt. The king was literally batshit crazy. Crazy ran down the Valois line. For most of the latter part of the 14th century, the king of France was so nuts that he was periodically. And I'm sorry, I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings. He was just mad. Okay. There's a purpose in talking about all of this. France, such as it was run by his uncles. But he was so crazy that he was obsessed with this notion that he was made of glass. Really? In England, Richard II ascends to the throne as a kid. Makes it through his teenage years, makes it up into his 20s, and then everybody realizes that he's no good. And he gets replaced. He is deposed as king, tucked away in a castle somewhere, and starved to death, while Henry IV comes to power. And Shakespeare wrote some plays about him, as well as his son, Henry V. And his son, Henry VI, who was a grandson of Charles the King of France, and the Valois madness showed up in him. That didn't work out very well for the English. But a grandson of John of Gaunt becomes known, is a Portuguese royal, known as Prince Henry the Navigator, and he's head of an outfit called the Order of Christ. And the Spanish and the Portuguese are not getting along. And with some of the knowledge that arrives via Constantinople, Prince Henry the Navigator, ostensibly under the rubric of spreading the good news of the salvation of the Lord Jesus Christ, begins sailing out into the Atlantic, and he finds things like the Azores, and he sails on until he reaches the African coast. And he keeps going back and going back and going back until he works his way around the big bulge of Africa and down into that lee area where there is some serious money to be made. In gold, in ivory, in human flesh. And so he continues to work his way around Africa, and more Portuguese do. And they pretty much cornered the market on that sailing route, and they were not particular about enforcing their proprietary trade rights. So the Spanish, of course, want to get in on the gig. And Ferdinand and Isabella managed to run the last of the Muslims and Jews out of Spain. This was seen as a real coup for Christianity, although what it meant was that the vast majority of actual intelligence disappeared from the Iberian Peninsula in the form of the Muslims and the Jews. So along comes Christopher Columbus, and no, everybody knew the world was round. They just, what they didn't know was how big the world was. And so he walks in with a con, and he says, look, the Portuguese are doing it all wrong. I can get to the Indies faster just by sailing west. And Ferdinand and Isabella need money. Portugal is getting fucking rich off of that gold and that ivory and human flesh and spices and stuff, because the Silk Road has largely been closed off because of the hostilities between Islam and Christian Europe. Meanwhile, in an effort to deal with the schism in the Roman Catholic Church, a council, and it had been resisted for years, but a council of theologians finally manages to get just one pope. And when you've had two or three feuding popes and anti-popes for 100 years or so, getting down to one pope was a real good thing for the church. But along the way, like I said, there were various heresies and evangelical movements and so forth. John Wycliffe, Jan Hus. And once they got down to one pope, the church said, hey, we got to stop this heresy business. And of course, their idea of stopping heresies was to, you know, kill them. It's during this period of time that, for instance, Joan of Arc, who was just a little insane girl who felt some stirring of pride in the fact that she was French and didn't want to be ruled by an English king, which was what Crazy Chuck had agreed to with Henry V. Those two died within a month of each other. Henry V died first, so he never got to be king of France. Then Crazy Chuck died, and that made young Henry VI, who was like 9 months old, the king of England and France. But so, you know, little Joan of Arc comes along and says, no, I don't want an English king, and starts claiming she's having visions. She, too, was nuts. She was hallucinating her brains out. But she managed to lift the siege of Orléans from the English. The English, she manages to get the Dauphin to Reims, where he is anointed and crowned king of France. And then she gets captured by the English. The English reach out to the Pope and say, ah, she's a witch. And the Pope says, well, you know, she must be, because, she's, you know, monkeying with our power now. So they burn her. And the church then, meanwhile, says, you know, we got a lot of heresy going on out there. So the witch hunts start. And by the 1480s, they've produced something called the Malum Maleficorum, which is a textbook for determining witches, which, you know, if she's weighs the same as a duck, she's made of wood, and therefore, you know, that kind of crazy shit. But they kill a lot of people based on crazy shit and torture. And that's the Inquisition. And so that is the religiously insane climate in which Cristobal Colon comes to manhood. And so he shows up with in the court of Spain with this cockamamie idea that he can get to China faster than the Portuguese can, and that he can get the Spanish in on some of the trade goodies, and maybe some gold and ivory, and who knows, maybe some human flesh into the bargain. I mean, does it blow your mind when you realize that we today are dealing with the persistent evils in the form of police killings of young black men? We are dealing with the persistence of evils that stretch back in excess of 600 years. that an argument in favor of spreading Christianity is how the Portuguese get to the portion of Africa where they can start buying people. It's a direct line. It's bright. It's no, there's no hash marks. This is part of what we celebrate to the extent we celebrate when we celebrate Columbus Day. This is what every single member of the Roman Catholic Knights of Columbus, ostensibly an order devoted to good works, this is what they celebrate. Of course, they were largely founded to battle back against the Freemasons, but never mind, that's a different filibobster. Interestingly, Europe, at the time that Columbus sails, has the lowest population of any time since the Roman Empire. That was how grave were the effects of the Black Death and its periodic recurrences, because, of course, they were dirty and they had no science. They had nothing but religion and superstition. And so they had no idea, you know. So the plague comes along and somebody says, you know what? Let's go kill some Jews. That'll make the plague go away. And everybody says, in the name of Christ. And boom, pogrom. And so Columbus sets out with three ships. And he knows that his ass is grass and Isabella and Ferdinand are lawnmowers if he doesn't come back with something to report. And so long about October the 12th, 1492, he sets foot on an island in the Bahamas called San Salvador. He may have actually first set foot on a smaller island called Little San Salvador, which is now billed as Half Moon Cay by the cruise ship companies. But it was not, there wasn't a lot. He needed to replenish stores. He needed to eat. He needed to get food. He needed to get water. Because the trip across the Atlantic had taken a long time. And he had no fucking idea where he was. He was convinced he was in China. What a dumbass. We've got a holiday. It was a federal holiday on Monday celebrating a fucking dumbass. But he did get to meet some of the people who lived there. When he was pitching the whole idea to Ferdinand and Isabella, he wanted, because again, you know, the Inquisition's underway, the church is out there stamping out heresies, and there's not nearly enough people in Europe to support popes and cardinals and bishops and archbishops and whatnot in the comfort to which they had become accustomed. So Christopher Columbus writes the following to Ferdinand and Isabella as an argument in favor of his journey. Your Highnesses, as Catholic Christians and princes who love the holy Christian faith and the propagation of it, and who are enemies to the sect of Muhammad, that would be your Muslims, and to all idolatries and heresies, resolve to send me, Cristobal Colon, to the said parts of India, to see the said princes, with a view that they might be converted to our holy faith. Thus, after having turned out all the Jews from all your kingdoms and lordships, your Highnesses gave orders to me that with a sufficient fleet I should go to the said parts of India. I shall forget sleep and shall work at the business of navigation so that the service is performed. So, you know, what he's going to go and help them root out Muslims and Jews some more in India. Because India needs to be Christian. Remember, Prince Henry the Navigator, grandson of John of Gaunt, went off on his little voyages out of Portugal
with the excuse that he was going to take Christianity to the heathens. You needed an excuse before you could go out and go raping and pillaging and plundering. But somewhere along the way, Columbus met the Arawaks, who were apparently pretty nice people. And they were nice to him. And he wrote in his captain's log, they brought us parrots and balls of cotton and spears and many other things which they exchanged for the glass beads and hawk's bells. They willingly traded everything they owned. They were well built with good bodies and handsome features. They don't bear arms. They do not know them, for I showed them a sword. They took it by the edge and cut themselves out of ignorance. They have no iron. Their spears are made of cane. They would make fine servants. With 50 men, we could subjugate them all and make them do whatever we want. Subjugate. And lo and behold, that's what he did. Writing to Ferdinand, he said, soon as I arrived in the Indies, in the first island which I found, I took some of the natives by force. He kidnapped them. He stole them. In order that they might learn and might give me information of whatever there is in these parts. And so it was that they soon understood us, and we them, either by speech or by signs, and they have been very serviceable. It never dawned on him that they could just sit down as equals and learn each other's language. They didn't suffer that disease of the heart that the Spanish suffered that could only be cured by gold. Now, you have to remember that with a reduced population and with Columbus going places that hadn't really been tried in before, that he was kind of hard up for a crew. So he wound up getting his crew from among the dregs and dockside hells of Spain. It meant signing on some pretty dicey, dodgy characters. Criminals. But, you know, he was good to his criminal crew. Really good to at least one of them. A guy named Michel da Cuneo. He wrote a letter. In the letter, he wrote, while I was in the boat, I captured a very beautiful Carib woman, whom the said Lord Admiral gave to me, the Lord Admiral being Columbus. When I'd taken her to my cabin, she was naked, as was their custom. I was filled with a desire to take my pleasure with her, and attempted to satisfy my desire. She was unwilling, and so treated me with her nails that I wished I had never begun. But, cut a long story short, I then took a piece of rope and whipped her soundly, and she let forth such incredible screams that you would not have believed your ears. Eventually we came to such terms, I assure you, that you would have thought that she had been brought up in a school for whores. Praise Jesus! You almost wonder if Michel de Cuneo, maybe Ferdinand and Isabella missed one or two, and maybe Michel de Cuneo is the great 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 granddaddy of Harvey Weinstein after something like that. And of course, that was just the beginning. But that's the beginning that we celebrate with Columbus Day. And after 1492, in another 50 years or so, population in Europe would finally begin to increase again instead of decrease. And that would provide by 1519,
1530. A sufficient excess of population to make travel to the New World and the colonization thereof a going concern for the money, for the people who backed these sorts of things. I thought about all this as I sat there watching watching Blade Runner before, you know, before we... Travel now to the a new life in the off-world colonies. And as Devin pointed out the other day, even Star Trek is a story of, you know, deep space colonization. Colonialism. Granted, dressed up with a little bit more humanity, you know, Prime Directive and all that sort of thing. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. And after Columbus, you get the settlement. You know, they go by fits and starts and jumps. Hispaniola, and then Cuba. It is from Cuba that both De Soto and Cortez set out. You know, one of these days I'll have enough money to go and get one of those DNA analyses. I would be thrilled to pieces if it turned out that I had the DNA of anything but English and Germans and Scots and Irish. Because it would mean that, you know, at least a chromosome's worth of me would belong here. Because for the most part, I'm just European. Just a second. But there begins on October the 12th. '1492. A continuum of rapine and murder, of theft and massacre that has not stopped to this day. Well, it was a month or so ago, at least, no more, that I had the story of the gold prospectors deep in the Amazon who ran into people who had never, because these people still exist on planet Earth, people who had never seen white folks. And of course, what did they do? They massacred them for that disease of the heart that can only be cured by gold. But there is no reason for an enlightened people to celebrate the life of Christopher Columbus. He didn't discover anything. You can't discover something that's got more. You can't discover a continent that's got more people on it than Asia and Europe combined at the time. All you can do is colonize it and steal it. God only knows what diseases. We don't have the follow-up on Michel de Cuneo's adventures in rape. God only knows what diseases he passed on to that poor woman. God only knows what diseases those dockside scum passed on to what. But in short order, they would begin dying like flies. Attempts to enslave them weren't worth a damn because they simply refused to be enslaved. They preferred death. And so, lo and behold, eventually the Dutch would get in the sailing business and start working their way down the African coast, and the hell with the Portuguese. And between the Dutch and the Portuguese and the Spanish, a thriving business in human flesh would grow to make up for the indigenous peoples of the Americas who would rather die than be enslaved and work for white murderers. History, I suppose, is a dangerous thing. Because if you actually learn it, you'll find in it things that you kind of wind up wishing you didn't know. Wouldn't it be nice to not know any of this sort of stuff and just be able to think that that white folks wandered on to an empty continent? That's the myth we like to propagate, especially the English. That they wandered onto an empty continent and just set out to colonize it and civilize it. But nothing could be further from the truth. De Soto, among others, made damn sure of that. The English themselves committed their own fair share of genocide in New England and the upper Atlantic states, into Canada. The French a little less so, but nonetheless, the French. The only ones who really didn't commit genocide were the first ones to get here, the Scandinavians. They didn't have gunpowder, so they were evenly matched with the Skraelings, who made their lives in Vinland so miserable that they decided that it just really wasn't worth it and went back to Iceland. But if we're going to celebrate something like Columbus Day, it seems to me that we damned well ought to know what we're celebrating and who we're celebrating. And as far as I'm concerned, if you're going to celebrate Columbus Day, fuck it. Celebrate Hitler's birthday, too, and add in Stalin's. There's a lot to not celebrate about American history as such, you know, post 1776. But we forget that the horrible legacy of slavery goes a hell of a lot further back than that. The first African slaves were not brought to North America. They were brought to places like Brazil by the Portuguese and to Mexico by the Spanish. And Cuba, and Haiti. And, yes, to North America. It's a history damned well worth knowing. I take back what I said about wishing we didn't. Because only if you have some working, functioning understanding of this history can we begin to understand the nature and the magnitude of the injustices that have been committed over the centuries. And you can trace it all back to the fall of Constantinople, to religious maniacs arguing over which guy was Pope, to the progress of a disease through a continent that wiped out a third of the population? And to the grandson of a royal cousin in England who winds up being a royal in Portugal. And a couple of Spaniards who nothing short of barely literate bigots. If you celebrate Columbus Day, you celebrate ignorance. You celebrate bigotry. And that's all there is to it. Thanks very kindly for your remarks. Mighty Mouse says, brilliant historical lesson, Bob. For that and everything else, I'll kick $25 into the pewter plate and offer a match for the next 25 before you sign off. Well, it's sign-off time if anybody wants to help. But, like I said earlier, if you want to just kick some money into Doug Jones's campaign, that's cool, too. More than cool. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to our chat room moderators. Thank you to Sparky and to Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook. At Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, all.